It's Tuned to Yesterday, delivering shows from radio's golden era. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark LeVanier. Lots of laughs in this hour of comedy. Later on, we hear Fred Allen, star in the Screen Director's Playhouse. But right now, an episode of The Abbott and Costello Show, heard on NBC on December 12th, 1946.
Draw up a chair for tonight's show, starring Bud Abbott and Lou Costello.
Costello, will you listen to me, please? Did you go hunting with your Uncle Artie Stebbins last Saturday?
What'd you say?
I say, did you go hunting with your Uncle Artie Stebbins last Saturday?
Yeah, and a terrible thing happened. A great big bear sneaked up behind us, grabbed Uncle Artie's gun out of his hands and stuck it in his back.
What did Uncle Artie do?
What could he do? He married the bear's daughter.
Never mind that. Did you see any big game?
I saw a giraffe, but I didn't shoot him. He had a sore throat.
Well, there's nothing worse than a giraffe with a sore throat.
Oh, yes, there is.
What?
A centipede with corns.
You dummy. I didn't think you ever went hunting in your life, and I don't believe you did. I'll bet you haven't even got a hunting license.
I have, too. Here it is.
Wait a minute. This is no hunting license. This is a picture of Hetty Lamarr.
You hunt what you like, and I'll hunt what I like.
You hunter. Boy, that's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, my brother and I, we used to hunt alligators.
Alligators?
Yeah, one time an alligator was just about to attack my brother-in-law. I fired off both barrels of my trusty rifle.
Did you kill the alligator?
See the swallow?
Genuine alligator?
No, genuine brother-in-law.
Talk sense. Come here, look at this. You see this picture? Now, I trapped all these rabbits last winter. Now, how many would you say there were?
876.
That's exactly right. Oh, wait a minute. How did you guess it?
Oh, I just count the legs and divide by four.
Costello, have you ever been in Africa on the safari?
No, but I've been in New York on safari.
A safari in New York?
Yeah, the Staten Island safari. And also the Hoboken safari.
Oh, now, come on, that's ridiculous.
There's lots of safaris around there.
Hey, listen to me, though. You should have been with me on my elephant hump. Oh, there I was, surrounded by elephants. One big bull elephant started towards me. I said to myself, I'm trapped. Abbott, you're trapped. Should I run or stand here and shoot the bull?
You've been doing all right up to now.
All right. Well, I shot. Yeah, elephant fell and broke a tusk.
Broke a what?
A tusk, tusk.
Tusk to you, too, and a couple of poo-poos.
Oh, no. A tusk is valuable. We use 50,000 elephants a year just to make billiard balls.
My, how do they train those big, clumsy beasts to do such delicate work?
I can see you know nothing about elephants.
I once held 100 elephants in India with an old acquaintance of mine. And an elephant sat on him. Someday I got to go back there.
Why?
To scrape up an old acquaintance. Hey, Abbott, did you ever shoot a zebra?
Yes, I did.
Could I have that zebra skin?
Well, what do you want with a zebra skin?
My Aunt Minnie is in Alcatraz, and she needs a new fur coat.
Oh, that's silly, Costello. However, I have a stuffed rhinoceros you can have. Of course, you know what a rhinoceros is, don't you?
Oh, sure. That's a hippopotamus with a red eater cap.
No.
Now, come on out there. I know you're breathing.
All right. Costello, this is the last week of the big game hunting season. Now, tomorrow I'm going hunting in the High Sierras, and I'd like you to come along with me.
Oh, gee, thanks, Abbott. Say, you've done a lot of hunting. What do they call those little flies that buzz around the animals?
Gnats.
I asked you a civil question. What do they call those little flies?
Gnats.
And gnats to you, too, brother.
No, you don't. Gnats are the flies that annoy the animals. Of course, some of them have ticks.
Why don't they take the ticks and give those flies a good thrashing?
I didn't say sticks. I said ticks. For instance, there's deer sticks.
The deer ticks?
Certainly deer ticks.
Who wound them up?
Oh, nobody wound them up.
And what makes them tick? Somebody must have slipped a groon in his gruel.
Costello, when I say deer ticks, I don't mean the deer ticks. I mean deer ticks.
Abbott, let me smell your breath.
Oh, come on, please. Talk sense. Deer has ticks, and the ticks bother the deer.
They used to bother me when I went to school.
Ticks bothered you in school?
Yeah. Arithmetic? Mathematics? And one time a tick got me in trouble with the teacher.
Oh, now, wait a minute. How could a tick get you in trouble with the teacher?
I kicked my tongue out at the teacher, and she trounced the tweet of my trousers with a trap. Now.
Doc Lowe, I'm talking about animal ticks. Hundreds of animals in the woods have ticks.
That must be a pretty sound when hundreds of animals get together and they all start ticking at once.
No, listen, Costello, listen to me. Deer have ticks. Elks have ticks. And one time my father shot a moose with ticks. Now, do you know what I'm talking about?
Sure, your father's moose ticks.
Oh, no. Costello, You're getting more stupid every day. I don't know what to do with you. I don't know what to say to you. I've tried and I've tried to improve your mind, but I just can't seem to get anywhere.
Why don't you face it, Abbott? You're a failure.
And here for Camel Cigarettes are Skinny Ennis and the boys with For Sentimental Reasons. Skinny on the vocal.
I love you for sentimental reasons. I hope you do believe me. I'll give you my heart. I love you. And you alone were meant for me. Please give your loving heart to me. And they will never part. I think of you every morning. Dream of you every night. Darling, I'm never lonely. Whenever you're inside, I love you for sentimental reasons. I hope you do believe me. I've given you my heart.
To go hunting with you up in the mountains.
All right, fine, Costello. How is your hunting equipment?
I got the best, Abbott. Look, Cornell Wilde's old address book.
Costello, hunting is a serious sport. Now, suppose you came face to face with a big Bruin. What would you do?
Ask him for a ticket to the Rose Bowl game.
Oh. You know, Marilyn Maxwell and Skinny Ennis are going to meet us at the hunting lodge. I hope you brought something along.
I did. I brought a quart of bourbon in case somebody gets a chill. What are you bringing, Abbott?
The chills. Costello, did you bring a gun?
Oh, yes, here it is. This is my sawed-off shotgun.
Wait a minute. Where is the handle?
How do you like that? I sawed off the wrong end.
Well, come on, Costello. Marilyn and Skinny are waiting for us at the hunting lodge in the mountains. Let's go.
Hiya, fat, flabby, and flat-headed.
No, wait a minute. Don't insult Costello, Skinny. Don't be a pill.
Skinny ain't no pill. He's too long and narrow.
Well, thank you, Costello.
You're a capsule. You're a funny-looking hunter, Skinny. Do you know anything about guns?
I know guns inside and out. My man, when I was a kid with the circus, they used to shoot me out of an air rifle. What do you know about hunting, Costello?
Have you seen that big bear rug in my living room?
Sure.
Well, I shot that bear myself. What a battle. It was either me or the bear.
Well, I'm glad it was the bear. You'd make an awful lumpy rug.
Hey, look, Costello, here comes Marilyn Maxwell.
And hello, Lois, Lewis, honey, my chubby little chuckling chipmunk.
Oh, Marilyn, my sugar-coated sharpshooter. Plug me with a buckshot of your kisses.
Oh. Lewis, honey, how do you like my hunting outfit? Saks Fifth Avenue.
Get a load of mine. Army surplus.
Oh, Lewis, it's going to be fun hunting with you. What's your favorite wild game?
Post office.
Lewis, post office isn't a wild game.
It is the way I play it.
Ah, Lewis, my little snowman. Come melt in my arms.
Gee, Marilyn, when I'm close to you like this, I just can't seem to break away.
Well, why not?
My nose is caught in the trigger of your shotgun.
Louis, if you'll excuse me, I'll go up to the hunting lodge and freshen up. As they say in Spanish, mañana o ya noches to you.
And your mama's own nice shirt to you, too.
Hey, Costello, Costello. Look up on that mountaintop. Now, there's a mother stork and two little storks.
Yeah, Abbott. Can I ask you a question?
Well, certainly.
When the mama stork talks things over with the little storks, who does she say brings the babies?
Help! Help! Beg pardon, stranger. Is there a skinny hombre in your party?
Yes, there is. Why?
Well, you better go over there and get him. A gopher just dragged him down into its hole.
Who are you, stranger?
I'm the game warden.
Yeah? What's your game, warden?
You want to know my game, partner? I'll tell you. It's parcheesy. But being up here in the wild country so much, I trained three little skunks to play bridge with me.
Is it a steep game?
No, we only play for a tenth of a cent.
Warden, we're after some big game. Have you seen any hereabouts?
Hereabouts? Hereabouts? Abbott, I thought we came up here to shoot deer. I wouldn't shoot a poor little hereabouts for anything in the world. Anybody that will shoot a little hereabouts and make a widow out of a sheabouts ought to be ashamed of themselves.
Oh, shut up, you idiot. How about it, Warden? Is there any big game around here?
Well, there's a ferocious mountain lion that has been terrorizing the countryside. He's been killing the farmer's chickens, and he's even been stealing eggs.
At the price eggs are now, I don't blame him.
That's a reward of $1,000 to the man that gets that mountain lion. One of you boys ought to trap him.
Which one of us would you suggest?
Why don't you try, Chubby? You got the biggest trap.
Oh, wow! Oh, 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 don't beat us anymore! Oh, no, don't beat us anymore, please! Please don't beat us anymore!
Hey, who are those guys?
That's the Nebraska football team. Shoot that lion, I'll give you $1,000 for a skin. I need it to make stockings.
What kind of stockings can you make out of lion skin?
Nylon stockings. So long, lard head.
Hey, you hear that, fellas? The lion's just north of us.
Which way south?
Come here, you coward. You're afraid. You're not afraid to take a chance, you understand?
Yeah.
I'll take this cane, you see it? A lion won't bite you if you're carrying a cane.
Yeah, but how fast do I have to be carrying the cane? I ain't mucking around with no lions, Abbott. The last time I saw a lion was in the Adirondack Mountains.
What happened?
I snapped at the lion, then the lion snapped at me, and then something whizzed past.
What was it?
Kansas City.
Quiet. I hear something. Listen.
I love you. Ouch.
I love you. Ouch.
I love you. Ouch.
I love you. Ouch.
Costello, what was that?
Two porcupines necking.
Marilyn Maxwell from MGM, producers of their Academy Award contender, The Yearling. Accompanied by the four hits, Marilyn sings Blue Skies.
Blue skies smiling at me. Nothing but blue skies do I see. Bluebirds singing a song. Nothing but blue birds all day long. I never saw the sun shining so bright. Never saw things going so right. Noticing the days hurrying by. When you're in love, my, how they fly. Blue days, all of them gone. Nothing but blue skies from now on. Never saw the sun shining so bright. Never saw things going so right. Noticing the days hurrying by. When you're in love, my, how they fly. Don't you fade away. Blue skies from now on.
Costello. All right, now take it easy, kid. I'm right in back of you. Don't worry about me. Here's the mouth of a cave. Now, go in there. That's a pal for you. I let you go in and get the lion, don't I?
You want me to go in and get the lion?
Certainly, I'm your friend.
Why don't you go in and get the lion?
Oh, what do you mean? You want me to go in? I have a family.
Oh, what I got?
Never mind what you've got. You go ahead and get that lion.
Okay.
What's the matter? You scared? Look at you. Your knees are knocking.
I always knock before I enter a cave.
Take it easy. Buck up, Costello. And remember, make the lion believe you're not afraid of him.
I couldn't be that deceitful.
You've got to think of those poor people who've lost their cattle and their chickens and their eggs on account of that lion. How can you face them, Costello? Think of it. How can you face them when they may be starving?
How can I face that lion? He may be starving, too.
Oh, there you are, Lewis, honey. Oh, I'm so proud of you. I know you're going in that cave and kill that lion just for me.
I am?
Yes. And, Lewis, honey, I'd do anything for you. Why, I'd climb the highest mountain. I'd swim the deepest river.
How do you like that? Here I am facing death, and this dame is going to go out climbing and swimming. Okay, I'll go in. But if that lion runs out, don't nobody shoot at him.
Why not?
I may be inside of him. Gee, it's certainly dark in this lion's cave.
Why don't you light a match?
Who said that?
It's me, the lion.
What do you know? A talking lion. I gotta tell Abbott, Skinny, and Merlin about this.
Oh, no, you must never tell anyone. I'm a hermit, and I just hate people. I wear this lion skin to scare them away. I live in this cave all alone.
How did you find this cave with all the housing shortage?
I subleased it from a bear that went on the road with a skating act.
You must get lonesome here all alone. Why don't you get a roommate?
I had a roommate, an elk. And then the meat shortage came along.
You mean that...
You see this tooth hanging on this watch chain?
Yeah.
Well, it ain't mine.
Look, Mr. Hermit, my girl is outside. I promised her I'd bring out the lion. Give me that lion skin and I'll take it out there and everybody will think you're dead and nobody will bother you anymore.
Here, take the skin. Oh, goody, goody. Now I can be a real hermit. And then I won't be bothered by Lucille Ball, Betty Grable, or Marilyn Maxwell.
Gee, do they call you?
No, that's what bothers me.
Hey, look. Here comes Costello out of the cave.
Oh, my hero. Look, he has the lion skin.
Who is the greatest hunter of them all? Bring him back alive, Costello.
When there is danger, who's the one they call? Bring him back alive, Costello.
Once I found a baby leopard with milk I filled his tummy. And then in some Egyptian tomb I helped him find his mummy.
He taught Tarzan everything he knows. When in danger, he's not yellow.
Who looks dapper in his hunting clothes? No one but my handsome fellow.
One day I caught a tiger, I wasn't even trying. And in the movie house I caught a Metro-Goldwyn-Lion.
Brave, yes indeed, a petrified beauty, the greatest hunter of them all.
Costello.
Yeah?
You hunt a lot of big game. Tell me, did you ever hunt bear?
I can't, Abbott. The bushes tickle me. Once I saw a mink, though. I saw a mink playing in the woods. I picked him up and I said to him, though you'll be a coat full on a turner, left mink, left. Though you'll be a lovely hat for Myrna, left mink, left. At zero, you'll have the best table. Think of those whole nights with Betty Shapiro. When you're on display at Bullets, we'll hear giggle, meet, giggle. All your cares will vanish if your tail will wiggle me. Keep your skin up. When you see Frank Buck, you're slim.
honey, my brave adventurer. Someday you must take me hunting with you.
I will, Merlin, my love. And you can ride on my Papa Jackass.
A Papa Jackass? Well, how do you know he's married?
All jackasses are married.
Oh, my hero. Let's celebrate tonight. We'll go to the smartest restaurant for dinner, see the best show in town, and then visit all the swanky nightclubs. Then, I'll kiss you goodnight and... After you've gone and left me crying, after you've gone, there's no denying how lonesome I'll be. There's no one I see.
Until she finds another sucker like me.
Who knows the jungle better than a book? Bring her back alive, Costello.
Cool summer snake with one hypnotic look. Bring him back alive, Costello.
I caught a baby penguin. He looks so awful cute. I haven't got the penguin, but I'm wearing his suit.
Who makes a wild left hand for this little thing? No one else but you, Costello.
He makes the others hang their heads in shame. He's so groovy, he's so mellow.
I catch a famous animal from every living herd. I even caught a Detroit tiger sliding in a
bird. The greatest
of genies,
the greatest hunter of them all.
Hey,
I'm out! The greatest hunter of them all.
Battle. But I won. Hey, Abbott, there is the lion skin.
Wait a minute, Costello. There's something phony about this. Turn that skin over. I thought so. There's a label on that lion skin, Costello. Come on, read it.
Eastern Columbia, Broadway at night.
Here are Abbott and Costello with a final word.
By the way, Costello, the December 10th issue of Look Magazine has printed the pictures of your big barbecue party for the kids.
Yes. Did you see it, Abbott?
I did. I saw your picture, your wife's picture, your kid's pictures, and my picture. But I didn't see my wife Betty's picture. And I know they took Betty's picture. Now, where's my wife's picture? Why wasn't it in there?
Well, the fellow that took your wife's picture couldn't develop it.
Why not?
He was afraid to go into the dark room with it alone.
Oh, good night, folks.
The Abbott and Costello Show on 2 and 2 yesterday from December 12th, 1946, an NBC broadcast. You're listening to an hour of comedy on 2 and 2 yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now, comedian Fred Allen was best known for his radio work, although he did have a short stint on television in his own program and as guest panelist on What's My Line. But in 1945, he was given the chance to be the leading man in a motion picture directed by Richard Wallace called It's in the Bag. In the motion picture, lots of radio and movie stars were featured, like Rudy Valli, William Bendix, Don Ameche, and Jack Benny. In this radio adaptation, we hear Fred reprise his role along with other capable radio actors like Frank Nelson, Lorene Tuttle, John Brown, and Hans Conried from February 17, 1950 on NBC.
RCA Victor, world leader in radio, first in recorded music, first in television, proudly presents...
Director's Playhouse, star Fred Allen, production It's in the Bag, director Richard Wallace.
The Hollywood Screen Directors present a play on mirth and murder. Tonight, for the first time on the air, the motion picture comedy... It's in the Bag, starring Fred Allen in his original role of Fred Flugel.
At this point, ladies and gentlemen, the star usually tells the story of his life. Well, the story of my life can be told very briefly. I was born, obviously. I lived, and I'm here tonight. Our story tonight can also be told very briefly. It's in the bag is a murder mystery, and the name of the killer is Monty the Goner. Well, that's all there is to the story. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and good night. Good night. No. Thank you very much.
Hey, Mr. Allen.
Monty the Goner, what's on your mind?
Is she going to let me kill nobody?
Well, not tonight, Monty.
Hey, you can't get away with this, Allen. I got a contract with Murder Incorporated.
Really?
If I don't kill somebody in this program, the union will pull out every murder show on the network.
Well, gee, I didn't know you were organized that well, Monty. We don't want any trouble, no picketing. All right, we'll go ahead with the program. Jimmy Wallington, will you set the scene, please?
All right, Fred. Ladies and gentlemen, It's in the Bag is the story of Fred Flugel, a flea trainer who lived a simple life with his wife, his son, and his fleas. As our story opens, we find our hero in front of his combination flea circus at home, going about his business.
Hurry, 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 folks. See the greatest flea circus of all time. See Sandow, the mighty strongman flea. See Rockefeller, the richest flea in the world. Rockefeller saved his money and retired and bought himself his own dog. Now, just a minute. Just a minute, Junior. Where's your ticket?
What ticket, Pop? I'm your son, Homer.
Oh, I thought you were one of the fleas with a hat on. Excuse me, son. Say, what have you got in that bag?
Nothing, Pop.
Let me see. Why, you little saboteur? Your father's a flea trainer, and you're coming home with a jar of insecticide.
Oh, Ma, help!
Fred, I sent Homer for that insecticide.
Tell him, Ma.
My mother warned me not to marry a flea trainer.
A flea trainer? I won't always be a flea trainer. There are millionaires in my family.
One moth-eaten millionaire.
Homer, don't talk that way about my uncle. One of these days, my Uncle Trumbull may make out his will in my favor and drop dead.
That's what I say, Flugel. Drop dead.
Monty the Goner. Fred Flugel, have you been playing the horses again?
Eve, just because my bookmaker is here with a blackjack in one hand and an open razor in the other hand, does that mean I'm playing the horses?
How much do you owe him?
$8.
Now, don't worry, Mrs. Flugel.
Oh, I'm not worrying.
If Pop don't pay you money, can I watch you break his ribs?
Who needs his ribs?
I need them. How will I look walking around in my bare lungs?
Flugel, from now on, you have got unlimited credit with me. Just look at this story in tonight's paper.
Is this the paper? Let me see. Millionaire dies of acute indigestion. Trumbull Flugel leaves nephew Fred Flugel $12
million. $12 million? No more fleas. We can live in luxury.
Luxury is right. From now on, we'll all wear underwear. Gentlemen, please, one at a time.
Mr. Flugel, you've ordered a 20-room mansion for your wife.
I know.
You ordered a rhinestone Cadillac for yourself.
Yeah.
How about something for your little boy?
Have you got a nice, sharp bear trap?
Well, I got one with four prongs.
I'll take it. Oh, excuse me, gentlemen. This may be my bookmaker. Hello? Yes, Monty. I'm betting $500 on Flying Max across the board at Belmont. No, I know. Yes, I know. That's $10,000 I owe you. My uncle's money? Well, no, I haven't got it yet. But this afternoon, I'm seeing my uncle's lawyer, Mr. Jefferson T. Pike.
Please be seated, Mr. Flugel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Pike.
As your late uncle's lawyer, I'm sorry to inform you that there has been an unexpected development.
Unexpected development? I'm still heir to my uncle's estate, sir.
Oh, yes, yes, indeed. But I'm afraid, Mr. Flugel, that the estate isn't quite the $12 million the paper said it was.
Well, what did my uncle leave me?
Four antique chairs.
Four antique chairs? Mr. Pike, what happened to that $12 million?
Your uncle had an unfortunate vice.
What was it?
He played pinball machines.
Well, how could my uncle lose $12 million playing pinball machines?
He tilted.
Eve, where's that can of insecticide? I'm going to end it all.
Oh, cheer up, Fred. It could be worse.
Worse? How could it be worse? I lost $12 million. I owe for a mansion, a rhinestone Cadillac that I can't pay for. Flying Max ran last at Belmont.
And I got my hand caught in a bear trap.
Who is it?
Six freshmen. I got four chairs here for Mr. Flugel.
Take them away. Feed them to the termites.
But, Pop, those chairs are Louis the 14th.
Tell Louis to come and get them out of here.
Look, maybe I can raise some money on them, Pop.
How, Homer?
Finley's Auction Parlor sells antiques like these for $50.
Hey, four chairs, $50? That's $200. Homer, get down to Finley's with those chairs.
Okay, Pop.
$200. Eve, where's my racing form?
Fred, are you crazy? You owe Monty the gun of $10,000 now.
Come in.
Fred Flugel?
Yes?
I'm Public Eye Perkins.
You're a policeman?
Yeah. Fred Flugel, you're suspected of murder.
Who's murder?
Trumbull Flugel. He was your uncle.
I know he was my uncle, but he died of indigestion. Something he ate.
What he ate was insecticide.
Insecticide?
Your uncle was poisoned.
That's ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
Why would Fred kill his own uncle?
Who was left $12 million in his uncle's will? Fred Flugel.
$12 million? All I got was four chairs.
Four chairs, eh? Flugel, before Public Eye Perkins is through with you, you won't need no chairs.
No?
You'll need a hammock.
A hammock?
Flugel, you're gonna swing.
This is ridiculous. Trying to make me a murder suspect?
Well, what are you worried about? They're trying to make me a widow.
Yes?
Fred Flugel?
Yes?
I'm from the Last National Bank.
The Last National Bank?
Your Uncle Trouble left this package to be delivered to you after his death. Sign here.
There you are.
Thank you.
Fred, from the bank. It must be money.
Money, money, Eve. I'll tear it open. Well, I'll be... Look at this. A phonograph record.
Some estate. Four chairs and a phonograph record.
A phonograph. Well, we might as well play it. With my luck, it'll probably be Margaret Truman singing Mule Train.
Here, put the record on the machine.
All right. I get the needle down here.
Dear nephew, this is your Uncle Trumbull.
My Uncle Trumbull?
Yes. I am speaking to you from the grave.
But, Uncle...
Quiet, please. I'm talking.
Yes, sir.
If I died under suspicious circumstances, you must bring my murderer to justice.
Yes, sir.
The evidence has been concealed, along with $300,000.
Where?
It is in one of the four chairs I left you in my will. Avenge me, my boy. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Uncle Trumbull. Eve, $300,000. It's in the chairs. Where are the chairs? What happened to those chairs?
Congratulate me, Pop. I sold them.
You sold what?
The chairs. Finley auctioned them off.
So, my own son steals four chairs and sells them to a crooked antique dealer.
Who bought them?
Who bought those chairs?
What's all the excitement?
Excitement? I haven't got a cent to my name. I owe Monty the Gone of $10,000, and I'm accused of murder. The only thing that can save me is the $300,000 and the evidence in one of those chairs.
Homer, do you realize what will happen to your father?
Yes, Homer. If I don't get the right chair...
You'll get the electric chair.
Trouble still pursues Fred Flugel, ex-flea trainer, ex-millionaire. Accused of his uncle's murder, penniless, in debt to a heartless bookmaker, Flugel has summoned his late uncle's lawyer, Jefferson T. Pike, to his home.
Have you any other suggestions, Mr. Pike?
Well, Mr. Pike, Flugel, if I were in your boots, I'd confess.
Confess what? I'm not guilty.
Oh, not guilty. How many times have I heard my client say that, even as I was helping the warden strap them in the electric chair?
But surely, Mr. Pike, you don't think my husband is guilty.
Until I get my retainer, madam, every client is guilty.
Mr. Pike, you'll get your retainer. As soon as Finley's auction parlor finds those four chairs, I'll have the evidence and $300,000.
$300,000? I'll start preparing your defense immediately.
Are you going back to the office?
No, I'm going down to Finley's auction parlor. Well, happy mandamus.
Some lawyer. When he gets through with this case, one of the chairs will go to the chair. Come in.
A
Hello, Flugel.
Monty the Goniff again.
Flugel, there is a difference between you and me.
What's the difference, Monty?
$10,000.
Now, look, Monty.
You and that phony newspaper story, your uncle dying, leaving you $12 million.
But, Monty...
If I don't get my money by 6 o'clock tonight, there's going to be another difference between you and me.
What difference?
I'm going to be living.
Monty, you'll get your money. I'll have $300,000.
$300,000? When?
As soon as I find that chair. I'm waiting to hear from Finley's auction parlor now.
Okay, Flugel. Give me a ring.
Where will you be?
At Finley's auction parlor.
Eve, I've got to get that money before 6 o'clock.
I wonder what's keeping Homer.
Come in. Public Eye Perkins.
Just checking up, Flugel. I never lose sight of a murder suspect.
But Fred didn't commit the murder.
No.
Oh, no? His uncle didn't die from playing leapfrog.
Now, look, Perkins, I can prove that I'm innocent.
How?
As soon as I find the evidence.
And where's the evidence?
It's in one of the chairs with $300,000.
$300,000?
We're waiting to hear from Finley's auction parlor now.
Okay, Flugel, I'm closing in.
On the murderer?
No, on Finley's auction parlor.
Dad, finding that chair is going to be like looking for a lost tooth at an Elks convention.
Oh, the telephone. Maybe it's good news.
I hope so. Hello?
This is Homer, Pop.
Eve, it's Homer.
What did he find out?
Homer, did you find out who bought the chairs?
Finding that chair is going to be like looking for a lost tooth at an Elks convention.
Homer, we already told that joke. You weren't here.
Oh, well, Finley is trying to remember who bought the chairs at the auction.
Well, tell Finley to concentrate. Tell Finley to try and remember one at a time.
Well, he says some guy came in and bought the first chair for a prize in a radio program.
A giveaway program?
Yeah, it's called Break the Sponsor.
So long, Pop.
Nice work, Homer. Eve, one of those chairs is on a quiz show. Where's my hat?
Fred, a radio quiz. They'll ask you a million questions.
Eve, for $300,000, I've got all the answers.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, this is Brick the Sponsor. And now our next contestant. And what is your name, sir?
Fred Flugel, Sr.
What is your occupation, Mr. Flugel?
Well, I'm a flea trainer.
And how did you become a flea trainer?
I started from scratch.
Well, Mr. Flugel, what category have you chosen?
Geography, sir.
That's very good. Are you ready for the first question?
As the flea said when he jumped on the dog, I'll bite.
Why, Mr. Flugel, you're funnier than Arthur Godfrey.
Who isn't?
All right, Mr. Flugel, here's our first question. Where is the capital of the United States?
Most of it is in Europe.
Congratulations, Mr. Flugel. You've won the jumbo jackpot prize.
Oh, good for me, sir.
Yes, sirree. And now, sir, you can have your choice of any piece of merchandise on the stage.
Well, I'll take that in the corner there, that Louis XIV chair.
Wouldn't you rather have this turtleneck raccoon coat?
No, I'd rather have the chair.
Well, how about a lifetime supply of Venetian blinds?
Oh, I wouldn't live long enough to raise them. No, I'd rather have the chair.
Well, how about a 2-week trip to Death Valley, complete with pallbearers?
No. Look, just no other prizes, if you don't mind. Just the jumbo. Leave out the jackpot. All I want is that Louis XIV's chair.
Louis XIV. Mr. Flugel, what do you want with that old chair?
I am going to take it apart.
How?
I am going to hit you over the head with it.
Oh! Ow!
Dad, there's nothing here. It's the wrong chair.
The wrong chair?
There's no evidence. No $300,000.
$300,000? You hit me on the head to get $300,000?
I'm sorry, sir.
Sorry? Mr. Flugel, you've just invented radio's newest game. Hit the announcer on the head. Win a cash prize. There's millions in it. Oh. Millions.
Well, Homer, I'm certainly glad you called us on the phone.
Well, there was nothing in the first chair, huh, Pop?
No, it was a waste of time. I won the jumbo jackpot, but I got the chair. There was nothing in it. Did
really?
You get any more information out of Finley?
Yeah. He says he sold the second chair to Dr. Klutz, a psychiatrist.
Klutz? How do you spell Klutz? With a small K, do you know?
K-L-U-T-Z, I think.
Klutz, have you got to give me that psychiatrist's address, Homer? Dr. Klutz, I'm here by appointment, sir. My name is Fred... My name is Fred Flugel.
Just lie down on the couch, Mr. Flugel.
But, doctor, I came to see you about a chair.
Mr. Flugel, you come to a psychiatrist, you lie down on the couch. Chairs is for midgets.
Well, no, I'm not a midget, as you could see if you had your glasses on. You don't understand, doctor. Doctor, I have a problem.
Put it on the couch.
Well, all right. I'll lie down. Just let me relax a second, doctor. Yeah, yeah. Doctor, I am in trouble.
You think you got troubles? Get up from the couch.
Why?
Let me lie down. Now I will tell you some troubles.
All right.
Last week, one of my patients, a stock salesman,
yes,
is saying to me, Dr. Klutz, because that's my name.
Yes.
Dr. Klutz, invest all of your money with me.
Uh-huh.
Together, we will dig an oil well.
An oil well? And yeah, you lost everything in the oil well?
Today, I don't know my money from a hole in the ground.
Oh, that's too bad.
You want to hear more troubles, Flugel?
No, Dr. Klutz. All I want to do is examine this Louis XIV chair in the corner here. Gad, it's the wrong chair. There's nothing in it.
But you ripped it to pieces.
It's all right. Don't lose your head, doctor. I'll send you a check for $25 to have it reupholstered.
$25 they get for upholstery?
Yes, doctor. Doctor, where are you going?
Goodbye, psychiatry. Hello, upholstery.
Eve, that psychiatrist was a waste of time. Klutz, remind me not to go to him in the future.
All right, now don't take off your hat. Homer just phoned from the auction parlor.
Good. Finley found the third chair?
Yes. It was sold to a gypsy mind reader named Sarah the Psychic.
Some customers go to this auction parlor. Madam, you are Sarah the Psychic?
Fred Flugel, I could tell you all the secrets of the past, present, and the future. If only...
If only what?
If only I could remember where I put my crystal ball.
Well, look, Sarah the Psychic, maybe you could fake it. I, Sarah the Psychic... I am here...
You do not have to tell me why you are here. I can read your mind.
Oh, I didn't realize my skull was that thin.
You came for a chair.
Uncanny.
Fred Flugel.
Yes?
Sarah the Psychic knows all. The chair is empty.
You mean I came here for nothing?
Not for nothing, kid. That'll be
$15.
$15? $5 for reading your mind.
And?
$10 for reading the chair.
What's new, Pop?
Homer, there was nothing in the third chair either.
Then it must be in the chair the guy just brought back here to Finley.
The fourth chair. Homer, bring that chair home at once.
Pop, I haven't got any money.
Homer, look, listen to your father carefully.
All right.
Here's what you do. Breathe on Finley's glasses. He'll think he's in Los Angeles. Grab that chair and run.
Right, Pop. There it is, Pop, the last chair.
Ah, and that chair is $300,000 and the evidence against my uncle's killer.
Don't touch that chair, Flugel.
Pop, it's Monty Vaganis.
But, Monty, the $10,000 I owe you is in that chair.
Flugel, I'm taking all the loot, the whole 300 grand. Stand aside. Don't move, Monty Vaganis. I got you covered.
Public Eye Perkins, what a capture.
Flugel, you're under arrest, too. I'm taking you in for the theft of this chair from Findlay's auction parlor.
Drop that gun, Perkins.
Fred, it's your uncle's lawyer.
Jefferson T. Pike.
I'm taking that chair, Flugel, and the money and the evidence.
The evidence? Then you, Jefferson T. Pike. You are my uncle's murderer.
Well, that's impossible.
Why?
Because at the beginning of the program, you said the murderer was Monty the Goner.
Well, that, Mr. Pike, was to throw you off the track. You murdered Uncle Trumbull because you knew that he knew that you were stealing from his estate.
The only proof of that is in the bottom of this chair. Nobody move! I'm going to rip off the lining, and then I'll... Oh!
Grab his gun, Pop!
I've got it, Homer. Now, Mr. Jefferson T. Pike, up with your hand.
I can't! Take it off! Take it off!
Take what off?
He's caught in my bear trap.
Homer, you mean?
Oh, sure, Pop. I saw all three of these guys snooping around in back of Finley's auction parlor, so when I brought the chair back here, I put the trap in the lining, just in case.
Public eye, Perkins. You in person, sir. Take them away.
Oh, boy, two of them. My first double dandy capture.
Well, Eve, with Pike and Monty out of the way, there's nothing to prevent us, Homer and all of us, from enjoying Uncle Trumbull's money.
Oh, thanks, Pop. Haul it out of the chair.
I'm just going to do that this very minute, son. Now, let me see. Why, there's nothing in here but an old envelope.
It must be a bank draft.
No, it isn't, Eve. It's a letter. Listen, my dear nephew, in my phonograph record, I forgot to say that the $300,000 would not be in cash. It is tied up in a murder story I wrote, which I am sure that you can sell to the movies. The name of my story is It's in the Bag, and it starts with a fella standing in front of a flea circus yelling, "Hurry, hurry, hurry, folks! See the greatest flea circus of all time!"
Oh, no, we don't have to go through all that again.
No, Homer. As one Siamese twin said to the other one as they prepared to sit down, this is the end for both of us.
You have just heard the last act of It's in the Bag. Now, here again is tonight's star, Fred Allen. Well, Fred, you always have your finger on the nation's pulse, so I suppose you know the big news in recorded music, that RCA Victor's new 45 RPM system is sweeping the country, that RCA Victor is making over 65,000 automatic record changers and over 2 million records every month, and people are still yelling for more.
Well, that's just what my RCA Victor dealer in New York tells me, Jimmy. He claims the 45 is a mob collector. Every morning, he just unlocks the door and jumps back out of the way.
Well, what do you think accounts for this swing to the 45?
Well, I can only tell you what swang me, Jimmy. Well,
what is that, Fred?
The small is a minor executive loose pulling some... The thing that swung me, Jimmy, is the small size of the 45 records, that's what. My big 78 records were driving me out of house and home. I had a stack of records 8 feet high in the back of my clothes closet, and whenever I reached for a necktie, I was always running my head through a tune and vice versa.
Yes, you're right, Fred. The 45s are so tiny, you can line up 150 records on 1 foot of bookshelf. How many do you have?
Oh, about 3 feet and a couple of toes, I'd say, offhand.
I suppose you judged the musical qualities of the 45 before going in for it so heavily.
Yes, I did, indeed, Jimmy. I replied the Jack, or as I prefer to say, the Yasha test of musical quality.
The Yasha test? What's that, Fred?
Why, Jimmy, it consists of four questions which all real music lovers always ask about any record system. Is Yasha Heifetz on it? Is Yasha Benny not on it? Is Yasha Eigen for it?
Well, the answer to all those questions is Yasha.
Really?
Seriously, Fred, though.
I'll be closing the curtains again here.
Well, Fred, I was about to mention that the 45 gives you a wealth of music.
Yes?
With the finest tone quality ever achieved in recording. Over 2,100 titles by the world's greatest artists and the stars who make the hits. Say, wait a minute. Wasn't there a fourth Yasha question?
Yes, Jimmy. Does this system save a man any Yasha? I mean Jack, translated.
Oh, why, yes, Fred. The 45 is the least expensive automatic record changer ever made. Prices start as low as $12.95 for the record changer, $29.95 for the Victrola 45, and records as low as 46 cents. Friends, there's every reason in the world to visit your RCA Victor dealers and join the swing to the 45.
Ladies and gentlemen, many of you have wondered what a screen director really does. Well, when a studio makes a picture like It's in the Bag and the star leaves town in a hurry, the screen director is the fellow who stays in Hollywood and takes the blame. And just when people are beginning to forget about it, somebody says, folks, I'd like to have you meet the director of It's in the Bag and the creator of such fine films as Shopworn Angel and Tycoon, Mr. Richard Wallace.
Thanks, Fred. You know, I haven't seen you in any other pictures since It's in the Bag.
Well, Dick, Hollywood had me. Hollywood threw me back to radio. And that's how people started watching television.
Fred, I thought you were fine in pictures.
Well, those are very kind words, Richard, from a man who's directed over 100 movies. Tell me, confidentially, how did I photograph?
Fred, our handsomest leading men have to be especially photographed to find their best camera angles. We never had that trouble with you.
You didn't?
No matter how we photographed you,
I know. I was all angle. Well, Dick, next time we make a picture together, you can photograph me with a sack over my head, and we can call it It's in the Bag Again.
Okay, Fred, but next time I'll leave town, and you take the blame.
It's a deal. Good night, Dick.
Good night, Fred.
Good night, everyone.
Well, good night to you, Fred Allen and Richard Wallace. Remember, next Friday, Betty Hutton in Incendiary Blonde with screen director George Marshall, brought to you by RCA Victor.
From the 1945 motion picture of the same name, It's in the Bag, featured on the Screen Director's Playhouse, an episode heard on NBC on February 17, 1950. And that wraps this hour of comedy on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for listening.